Hello, and welcome to Bible Talk, a show about the Bible, its history, and the people who believe in it. I'm your host, Zai Mazza, and today's episode is called The Bible in the Time of the Watchers. Now, a lot of my listeners will have not heard of the Watchers, even the more religious and or devout ones, and the reason for that is because the Watchers actually aren't in the Bible whatsoever. But a lot of you have probably heard of the angel Michael, the angel Gabriel, maybe even Raphael, Raguel for the more zealous among you. And a lot of you have probably heard of demons. You might even know the names of a few. And you've probably also heard, or you know, maybe not, it's not extremely common knowledge, but you might have heard of the Nephilim because they are in the Bible. And what I want to talk about today is this verse in Genesis chapter 6. And it came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair. And they took them wives, whomsoever they chose. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not abide in man forever, for that he also is flesh, therefore shall his days be 120 years. Up until then, men had been living for a while, and we'll get into that for a second. The Nephilim were in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bore children, that's a pretty raunchy verse, huh? And they bore children to them. The same were mighty men that were of old, the men of renowns. And this has also been, you know, translated as the heroes of old, things like that. So where we are in the Bible is, last time we talked about Cain and Abel, and like I said, Adam and Eve begot Seth, and Seth had this line, and these people lived for a really long time. Enosh lived 90 years before he had his first son, Kenan, and then he lived another 815 years. And in that time, he had kids and everything. Mahalalel lived 65 years and begot Jared, and then lived another 830 years after that. By far, the person who lived the longest was Methuselah, who lived 187 years and begot Lamech, that's the father of Noah. And then Methuselah lived another 782 years after that. And Methuselah actually outlived Lamech, and he would die just before, 7 days before the great deluge in the time of Noah. But what I want to talk about today is Methuselah's dad, because Enoch is also kind of crazy. Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. And Enoch walked with God after he begot Methuselah 300 years and begot sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Enoch shares, along with two other people in the Bible, a very special distinction. He was never claimed by the angel of death. If you're Jewish, there's only two people like this. There's Enoch and there's Elijah, the prophet Elijah. If you're Christian, there are three. There's Enoch, the prophet Elijah, and Jesus Christ. These are the only three people to never die. So this verse, Genesis chapter 5, verse 21, about Enoch, and then Genesis chapter 6 about the Nephilim and the sons of God having children with the daughters of men, these are kind of throwaways in the Bible. A lot of pretty interesting things are clearly happening here, and they're kind of just glossed over. And in, if you recall in the first episode, I mentioned that the Bible really needs to be understood in context, not just historically, but there's a wide body of literature, and the word I used was apocrypha, that define the Bible. And even if this apocrypha isn't considered to be canonical by the Catholic Church or different denominations, these books would still have been read by the people who wrote the Bible and by the first people who read the Bible, so they would at least have this context. You and I, we don't have that luxury because we didn't grow up in that culture. And the book I want to read or talk about today is called The Book of Enoch, the Prophet. It's an apocryphal book. It's considered canon by Beta Israel, a Jewish group in Africa, and by the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. And the Ethiopian Orthodox Church is pretty cool because they were pretty much a Christian branch that was basically unaffected by Catholicism. They're very special in that regard. Even Protestant branches like Lutherans, even Mormons, Seventh-day Adventists, they've all, or I'm sorry, the Church of Latter-day Saints and Seventh-day Adventists, which is a relatively modern group, even Anabaptists like Mennonites, all of them were in some small way affected by the Catholic Church. I mean, Protestantism is defined by the Catholic Church. It's protesting against the Catholic Church. The Greek Orthodox and Russian Orthodox churches used to be one with the Catholic Church at some time, but the Ethiopian Orthodox Church never affected. Yeah, same with Beta Israel in Africa, very much unaffected by the goings-on in Europe and the Middle East. So after the Septuagint was written, which I also mentioned in my first book, and it was later revised, the Beta Israel never got the memo. But the corresponding verse, this book of Enoch chronicles Enoch's life, and it's very interesting. We're going to spend many episodes on this, but for now I want to talk about the Watchers. And the corresponding verse in the book of Enoch happens in chapter 7, verse 1. It happened after the sons of men had multiplied in these days that daughters were born to them, elegant and beautiful. And when the angels, the sons of heaven, beheld them, they became enamored of them, saying to each other, "Come, let us select for ourselves wives from the progeny of men, and let us beget children." Then their leader Semyasa said to them, "I fear that you may perhaps be indisposed for the performance of this enterprise, and that I alone shall suffer for so grievous a crime." And basically what happens is these angels, the watchers, they take an oath with each other that, you know, they all swore together and all bound themselves by mutual execrations. Their whole number was 200 who descended upon Ardis, which was on the top of Mount Armon. Basically, they all agreed, no, we're all going to equally share in the pleasures, and we'll also equally share in the punishments if we are punished for this. And these are the names of their chiefs: Semyasa, who was their leader, Urkabaramil, Akabil, Tamiel, Ramuel, Danel, Azgil, Saraknyal, Azael, Armors, Batral, Anain, Zavabe, Samsavil, Ertael, Terel, Tamiel, and Arazial. And there's another one of note, Azaziel, which is presumably different from Asael, so don't confuse them. But basically, these are the important watchers, and some of you may or may not have heard those names. They're often, they correspond roughly with a lot of other gods in the region, and I don't just mean the Sumerians and the Babylonians that I've talked about before, but even the Canaanites and things like that. They correspond to a lot of different gods, and the reason for that is that these Nephilim were the heroes of old. Basically, then they took wives, each choosing for himself whom they began to approach and with whom they cohabited, teaching them sorcery, incantations, and dividing of roots and trees. And the women conceiving brought forth giants, whose statures was each 300 cubits. These devoured all which the labor of men produced until it became impossible to feed them. So this is a pretty intense period of time. You have these giants being born to women. These are the heroes of old. So again, I talked about before, this notion of your God is false and my God is true is relatively recent. What the Jews used to believe is, you might have seen miracles and amazing things. You might have a God that taught you all sorts of crazy things. And by the way, the Watchers taught men a lot of things. Armors taught the solution of sorcery. Barkael taught the observers of the stars. Akabil taught signs. Tamiel taught astronomy. And Azaradel taught the motion of the moon. And men being destroyed cried out, and their voice reached to heaven. Basically, yeah, this is nuts. Impiety increased, fornication multiplied, and they transgressed and corrupted all their ways. Amazerik taught all the sorcerers and dividers of root. So there's a lot of crazy things going on, and this is more or less why God sent the deluge in the first place. A lot of people mention that the Bible seems, you know, very cruel, but it wasn't just that men weren't listening to God. There was crazy, unnatural things happening, which is why this deluge was sent, according to the Judaic version. The reason why I read from the book of Enoch is, like I said, many of you know what demons are. I hope all of you do. And a lot of you know the names Michael and Gabriel and things like that. But they're not really talked about in the Bible much. Certainly, demons are mentioned, but they're given very little context. I'm having trouble remembering, but I think if any of the archangels are mentioned, they're mentioned maybe two or three times. This is the origin of these angels. Everything that we understand about them, whether or not we want to consider this book canon, this is where it comes from. And here we have in chapter 9, then Michael and Gabriel, Raphael, Suriel, and Uriel looked down from heaven and saw the quantity of blood which was shed on earth and all the iniquity which was done upon it and said to one another, it is the voice of their cries. So these are the good angels. And this is also the first origin we hear of the fall of angels. The fallen watchers are later all referred to as Satans, which Hasatan in Hebrew just means adversaries there. They opposed God. And this is also the origin of a lot of you and a lot of people get their knowledge of the fall of Satan from Paradise Lost, which is John Milton's poem. But this is the origin of it. It doesn't go back any earlier than this book. And at this point, it's worth mentioning, the Book of Enoch probably wasn't written by Enoch. It's dated most likely around the time of the Babylonian captivity, which most of these books are, which would put it pretty much the author of it would have been a contemporary with like Daniel, which it doesn't make sense for the author of that to be Enoch, an antediluvian, meaning pre-flood patriarch. But that doesn't mean, you know, if you are a believer, that this book, you know, you have to ignore it. The Jewish people, they've always believed in channeling, whether or not they think it's a good thing to do, which, spoiler, they don't. They think it's a very bad thing to do. But it's very possible that whoever wrote this book was, you know, if you believe that way, was divinely inspired. It could have been an oral tradition like most of the Torah and then eventually written down. Just because it wasn't written at around the time of Enoch doesn't mean it's not legit. So let's talk about the origins of demons. God is pissed at the Watchers. He's like, I can't believe you did that. So now the giants who have been born of spirit and flesh shall be called upon the earth evil spirits, and on earth shall be their habitation. Evil spirits, it could also be translated as demons. These evil spirits shall proceed from their flesh because they were created from above. From the Holy Watchers was their beginning and primary foundation. Evil spirits shall they be upon the earth, and the spirits of the wicked shall they be called because their bodies were upon the earth. The habitation of the spirits of heaven shall be in heaven, but upon earth shall be the habitation of terrestrial spirits who are born upon earth. So God basically is saying, I'm going to rend their spirits from their bodies, and the spirits of the giants shall be like clouds, which shall oppress, corrupt, fall, contend, and bruise upon earth. They shall cause lamentation. No food shall they eat, and they shall be thirsty. They shall be concealed, and shall not rise up against the sons of men and against women. So here's a very interesting thing. A lot of people's conception of demons comes from horror movies, where it's like, nah! And the demon comes out of nowhere and, like, you know, rips your head off, and demons are killing people. That's not a Judeo-Christian or even Islamic view of demons. Demons cannot harm you. The only instance of a demon or angel, depending on how you want to call it, actually harming a person was in Job, the book of Job. And Satan, for those of you who have read it, you'll recall, required special dispensation from God to be able to engage in that. So that was a very intense demonic activity. Not very normal. And as God says, they shall not rise up among men. However, what they shall do is they shall cause lamentation. They shall oppress, corrupt, fall, contend, and bruise upon earth. So what does that mean? Basically, what they're talking about is possession, temptation, all of the things that are typically believed to be demons. They shall, you know, cause iniquity. They shall cause strife among men. Basically, they're there to mess around. They're there to essentially fuck with people. That's their whole thing. It's kind of both reassuring and kind of weird at the same time. But basically, when we talk about demons today, we usually use it as in a metaphorical sense. We say, oh, well, you know, Jeff, he has demons, or, you know, some demons followed him home from the war, or, your mother, your father has some demons, you know, referring to alcohol or substance abuse or something like that. It's usually used in the metaphorical sense. And what I'm telling you now is that the ancients used demons in the metaphorical sense too, except it was literal. That's literally what demons are. When you see a person afflicted by mental illness, by, you know, a disease, of the mind, of some sort of, addiction, maybe. Maybe it's a sex addict. It doesn't have to be a substance abuser. Maybe it's, someone... The ancients would have considered, proclivities like homosexuality to be the result of demons, but that's for a, not that ancient, but that's for a whole other reason that we'll talk about too. But basically, anything wrong or, messed up with a person, that's what demons were. That's what they were basically created or cursed, you could say, to do. That was their lot in life. So the Watchers are like, oh no, Enoch, you gotta, intervene on behalf of us to God because we don't want to be stuck here on Earth. And we'll talk about in the next episode, but basically God's answer to their prayers is no, you're fucked now. And part of your punishment is you have to watch your kids die, which is pretty macabre. But here we are, we'll go on to the next chapter. And as to the death of the giants, wheresoever their spirits shall depart from their bodies, let their flesh, that which is perishable, be without judgment. Thus shall they perish until the day of the great consummation of the great world. A destruction shall take place of the Watchers and the impious. And now to the Watchers who have sent thee to pray for them, he's talking to Enoch now, who in the beginning were in heaven, say, in heaven you have been. Secret things, however, have not been manifested to you, yet have you known a reprobated mystery. In this you have related to women, in the hardness of your heart, and by that mystery have women and mankind multiplied evils upon the earth. Say to them, therefore, never shall you obtain peace. So the Watchers are basically fucked. And the Book of Enoch talks about other things. The Watchers basically set themselves up as gods among men to be worshipped, and so do some of the Nephilim. And this is how the basically the ancient Jewish worldview rectifies other people saying, well, your God isn't the right God. They're saying, yeah, well, you're just worshiping, people who have descended upon earth, angels who have descended upon earth and basically been instituting themselves as gods, even though they're not. And another description that happens here is God tells, I think it's Raphael, to go and find Azazel and bind him hand and foot and send him to basically hell. And we'll talk, also the Book of Enoch winds up being a lot like Dante's Inferno, where Enoch gets to tour heaven. And heaven sounds a lot like Dante's description of hell. So it's not entirely unreasonable to say that one book didn't influence the other. Obviously the Book of Enoch predates Dante's Inferno by a long time. But basically, this process of binding Azazel hand and foot becomes repeated in another apocryphal book, the Tobit. And I think the Tobit, which is the book of Tobias and his son, I think the Tobit is canon among Catholics. I know it is among Ethiopian Orthodoxy, but it's not canon for most Protestant faiths. But basically the Tobit is another instances of demons that we see, and this process is repeated. And we learn a little more about demons from the Tobit. But basically, whenever you see Jesus driving out one of these evil spirits or demons in the New Testament, these are the spirits of the Nephilim, the heroes of old. If you asked Jesus about Hercules, or if you asked, let's do better than Jesus, if you asked Daniel about Hercules, and obviously the Babylonian captivity predates Hellenism, by quite a bit. But if you asked any contemporary Jew with Greeks about Hercules or any of their, Prometheus, any of their gods, they would say it was either a Watcher, or more than likely it was a Nephilim. It was of the flesh of man and the spirit of God, and they were believed to be giants. Quick note, anyone who's seen the Noah movie, you'll be familiar with the Watchers as like basically stone golems. It's bullshit. The movie sucks for so many reasons. One of them that frustrated me so much is that they wanted to get the context of the Watchers and everything, and they got it all wrong. They made the Watchers seem so selfless, trying to help mankind. It wasn't about that at all. They literally thought human women were hot and they wanted to get some. So don't believe everything you see in the movies. But basically that's the origin of demons for the Judeo-Christian faith. And it's, like I said, it is a throwaway verse in the Holy Scriptures, but it's the context is there, and it was quite an intense story for the ancients. The other throwaway thing that I mentioned was Enoch, about how he walked with God and then, you know, he left with God. Enoch actually descends to heaven in the book of, ascends to heaven in the book of Enoch after he comes down to relate all he sees, and he becomes the archangel Metatron. And it's fresh in my mind because as this episode's being recorded, Sukkot is kind of going on right now. But, you know, a few weeks ago, Yom Kippur Rosh Hashanah happened. And according to Jewish tradition, you have to atone for your sins in the intervening period between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur to get inscribed in the Book of Life. And who does the inscription? A lot of people think it's God, but it's not. It's actually Metatron who does it. And the, Jewish mysticism, Kabbalah, Metatron is very important for them because he is the scribe of God. Enoch was a scribe on earth, and he ascends to become, you know, God's scribe. But the archangel Metatron is the one doing those inscriptions. And that's pretty interesting, too. The Metatron is it sounds a lot like Megatron, but he's not a Decepticon. He's actually one of the more important angels, right up there with Michael, Gabriel, and Samael. Samael, also the angel of death. But next time, what we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about the description of heaven in the Book of Enoch, because again, this is the heavens. This is much of what informs most people's understandings for a long time of heaven and hell up until you get contemporary Christian thought. This was basically the only depictions of heaven you get. You'll notice in the Bible, description of heaven are markedly absent from it. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about basically Samael, the origins of the angel of death, the different jobs of the different archangels, the good watchers, the watchers who didn't descend onto earth. And we'll also talk about the Book of Enoch interpretation of the fall of man, which is very interesting because it's a little different from what we talked about before. And it's a little different from the typical wisdom, which is that Satan was a serpent. Like I said, there are like three versions of the fall of man. One is the serpent is literally just a serpent, and serpents are really shitty, and there's a lot of legends about serpents in Hebrew lore and Christian lore for that reason. The other one is that the serpent is the devil, Satan, and then the third, well, besides it being a metaphor, and then the third is that is the one that comes from the Book of Enoch, which is that the serpent is Gadrel or Gadriel, depending on how you say it, and we'll talk about that as well. Another thing that I wanted to mention is the insight revealed about human psychology by the ancients when they talk about demons. You'll notice a few things. One, demons can't be killed. Jesus never kills a demon, and they're spirits in the Book of Enoch. And there's also legends about basically after the flood, there's so few men and so many of these evil spirits that Noah's like, God, come on. The spirits are basically haunting us. And so there's some sort of ritual that goes on with that. But basically, one is water, is often holy water for Christians, but in Judaism it'd be a mikvah, a ceremonial bath, being used to basically deal with these spirits. And we'll talk about all those different cool psychological insights next time. But a lot of them correspond to modern understandings of psychology, which is pretty interesting. But that's all we have today. Join us next time. Like I said, we'll talk more about the Book of Watchers. It's pretty exciting stuff. Thanks for listening, and have a great day. Bye-bye.